And welcome to episode 41 of Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan, and welcome back to our first show of 2020. Steve joins me as ever. How are you, mate?
Very good, very good. Excited. Lots of shiny about.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Today we're going to be talking about the Las Vegas Open previews. We're just going to kind of scroll down and talk about them all. We're not just going to do the 40k ones, we're going to cover all of it.
Yeah, no, lots to talk about.
So start every good podcast with an apology, right? So we have let Christmas kind of get in the way slightly, and then I was hurrying to finish my Sons of Medusa for the GT final, and then I was also focusing a little bit on producing some content for my new Age of Sigma podcast, so which is why it's been a little bit of a kind of with Christmas and a painting deadline and obviously the other project, we have been a little while since our last podcast. December the 22nd, so just over a month. So hopefully it won't be as long until episode 42. But you know what it's like, all this hobby stuff gets in the way of podcasting, and podcasting gets in the way of hobby, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But
find balance of two.
Yeah,
exactly. Right, so Las Vegas Open previews. So first of all, before we start, Steve, did you have kind of any expectations?
No, I guess we were going to get continuing tales of the Psychic Awakening, because there's still plenty of factions that need covering. Apart from that, obviously, there'd been an AOS maybe leak that had gone around the internet about what something that might be coming. And obviously, we'd also been given a bit of a heads up that Light Elves were on the way.
Point to Elves.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, but you know, the exact details, we weren't sure, and how far they were going to go, we weren't sure. And yeah, we've got a bit of everything. All the systems get some love.
Yeah, I mean, I like all these Psychic Awakening books. They're brilliant. Although there's a little part of me that kind of feels like we think there's a new edition, right, coming in the summer.
If you do your maths,
we think it's coming. Ninth edition is coming in the summer, or 8.5, whatever it is, just some form of new edition. And Adepticon seems like a reasonable place to leak that, to kind of start talking about that.
Yeah.
So these Psychic Awakening books almost feel like it's like holding for ninth.
It's content safe.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. And it's good content, like fantastic rules, and like they've you know, brought to life some really interesting kind of space marine mechanics with the upgraded apothecary and the upgraded ancient, things like that. They've added new things for Eldari, for Tyranids, for the Dark Angels. But it's not a new Dark Angels Codex. It's just like some updated rules for them.
Yeah, I think what for me it feels like is here's some little bit more extra story, localized little story bubbles for you to play in with some cool new rules and some cool new models. But it's not like we're asking you to invest in a whole new codex or a whole new, you know, we revamped all these models. So you go and buy this whole new army only come summer. And whatever the new version is, suddenly invalidates it. And I think, you know, this definitely feels like just being conscious of that. I mean, yeah. People still go and buy armies, but for me, I think
the lack of the overarching narrative is, you know, the Psychic Awakening. That's fine. But Vigilus was so linked. Whereas because these are slightly more snapshotty. There is an overarching narrative, but because they're snapshots and not super obviously linked, do you know what I mean? Like one doesn't follow the other necessarily.
Yeah,
I've almost been like not as invested in the narrative as I was with Vigilus.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I've got to put my confession hat on here and say, you know, back in the day I said I love Vigilus, but I always find it a bit twitchy that why does there every faction get to turn up and get past, you know, the space lanes must be absolutely crowded, you know, bumper to bumper to try and get onto the planet surface to drop troops off.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was but I understood why, because you want everyone to be able to have a piece of the pie. Now we get Psychic Awakening, where we are focusing on just a couple of factions, two or three factions in a sector, in a system even. So I think, you know, I can't have my cake and eat it. So, you know.
So in hindsight, what do you prefer? Having said you wanted the other, you've now got the other.
So I think the learning for me is I think Vigilus. I will take the slightly unusual setup, because actually I feel it gives it more depth. And what it's allowed me to do in retrospect is to, we're having a game on Vigilus, and then we've used the table that allows GC occultists to rock up as like wandering monsters, if you like. And you couldn't do that with the others without, you know, the Vigilus allowed you to do that. So I think I prefer Vigilus. And I just think that the ability to go that deep, you know, two big books telling one story is great.
Yeah, I think that's my preferred format as well. But hey, it's horses for courses, isn't it? You know, lots of people are enjoying Psychic Awakening more than we are. But that's not to say, I kind of don't want to be like, I'm not enjoying Psychic Awakening. I think the format that I prefer is that more Imperial Armor, Vigilus style book.
Yeah.
And actually, to be honest, the Psychic Awakenings are more like the Imperial Armor in that they focus on a couple of factions.
Yes.
So, yep. But hey, anyway, talking of Imperial Armor, they kind of featured in the previews. So let's talk about that. So we obviously got told, so why we're talking about Psychic Awakenings, because the next book that's coming is Engine War, but that's yep. the third book that will get released from now. So we've already had the new Dark Angels one. We've got the Tau one, which we believe to be Tau and Genestealer cults, and that's based off a Warhammer community post where they posted something about the greater good as a lore snippet, and it included Genestealer cults.
Nice.
And then we've also got the Beast Arises, or Saga of the, no, not the Beast Arises, it's a different book, the Saga of the Beast, which we I guess were talking about maybe being Space Wolves versus Orcs, and that ties in nicely with the fact that the Ultimate Warlord is coming.
Yes
Makari. Yeah, the Ultimate Warlord, Makari. Woo, 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 woo. I think I've still got Makari somewhere. That little metal gobbo banner waver. He's so cool.
Yeah, no, great video. I mean, the video production on this stuff is just really, really good. I think it's the team are knocking it out of the park, and for finding the right balance for the, you know,
kind of like
the character.
Comedy and reveal.
Yeah,
and this is exactly what I want from a reveal of this kind of model, is snippets of the model. So you're like, okay, it's obviously, so just for anyone that hasn't seen it for some reason, it's Gazgul Thraka is coming back, and he's got an amazing, massive, you know, Primarch-esque model, Prime Orc. And there's been rumors of this Prime Orc model coming for a while. So it is, you know, whether that's kind of wishlisting and it has turned out to be true because they've now done it, or whether that's because someone had it leaked a couple of years ago and this is now it coming to the fore. But I'm excited to see this model in the flesh, or the full reveal, because I haven't seen it yet. And someone's conveniently pasted all together the pictures. So Chapter Master Valrak posted it from his Twitter, so we retweeted it on the AOTI account as well. So someone pasted together all the images to show they're more like glued together, as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can still only see half a model, which is fantastic. So even with a bit of, you know, internet, you know, detective work, we still don't know what the whole model looks like, which is great, because I want to see a high definition full reveal of this model followed by a 360 degree spin around on the web store. I don't really want to, like, I don't want to expend all my excitement on a video.
Yeah, totally agree. I think for me, you know, when you can capture the character of the army with the video style and with the tease style, then brilliant. You're just bringing it to life. I love it. I think it's great. And I think sometimes it's quite tricky that, you know, video reproduction, you know, even if you've got 1080p, you've got HD quality, it's a moving image, and you don't always get the best sense of the mini until, you know, even in the high, you know, high-res photos.
Oh yeah, so many times, you know, they've got that cabinet of the new releases in the Warhammer World store as you walk in.
Yeah,
kind of your 2 or 12 o'clock as you walk through the main double doors up the stairs, it's always got the new what's about to come out or what has just come out. And so many times I've been there for an event or something and like glanced at a model that I've not dismissed, the wrong word, but kind of been like, oh, that's a cool model, whatever. I looked at it in the flesh and be like, that is so much better in the flesh. Like, look at it from that angle. It's amazing. Because as you say, it only captures one perspective. And I know they call it the golden perspective, or the model's golden angle. They try and show the model in the best light from one shot, but that's not always possible to capture the kind of the movement of the model, if that makes sense.
Yeah, especially as the sculpts these days are
so dynamic.
Yeah, with things swishing about at different angles, and to understand the depth of some of the models sometimes is difficult until you see them in real life.
Yeah, and the scale as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Noctolith crown. The first time I saw that Noctolith crown, I was like, is that the Noctolith crown? Like, what the? It's huge. It's massive.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that until you see it.
No, it's an imposing looking thing. I think I think I cut my finger just by looking at it once.
like that Corn Castle table at Wormworld that had a sign saying "Watch out for the spikes."
Yeah, yeah.
Corn cares not, and all that. Right. So, Engine War, as we said, Engine War is going to be the next Psychic Awakening book in the series, but it's still only going to be after the following two that we know to be coming, and that contains Adeptus Mechanicus, Imperial Knights, Chaos Knights, and Demons of Chaos.
Yes.
So that's quite cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very cool because I've got a Chaos Knight army. So that is very cool. Very exciting to see what they bring.
Yep.
It's interesting because a Chaos Knight army obviously is very extreme one way. So is this going to potentially include ways in which you could include kind of demons? Because, you know, being able to include Chaos Knights and demons in one army without losing your kind of faction benefits would be really interesting and would kind of plug a gap that you need plugged in Chaos Knights or any full knight army.
Yeah.
And the same for Admech and Imperial Knights. I suppose, you know, you can take a detachment of Imperial Knights in an Admech army because Admech don't have the kind of doctrine style caveats on their like allegiance abilities, do they? You don't have to have your whole army comprising Mechanicus models to be able to get any bonuses. It's just the detachment gets it.
Yeah.
But whether that will change, you know, in the future, who knows? Or maybe this book will introduce a mechanic that does do that. That does restrict you. It seems to be the way that Games Workshop was going with its rules. So it will be really interesting to see. And love stomping about with my knights. Any book that releases like this that ties into an existing complete army of mine, I'm very happy with. Because it means I don't need to start anything new.
Yes.
It means I can just like get the book and start playing with it straight away. And that's really good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you'll find something, Dan, you need to do.
I'm sure I will. Well, Mechanicus, the new Mechanicus stuff is looking pretty cool. So it's very tempting to do. Although, right. Let's talk about what do you want to talk about? Birds or horses?
Horses.
Horses. They're cool.
And just, I think this last batch of mounted, you know, the Bone Reaper cavalry, what we'll see in a minute for the Elf cavalry, these cavalry, just the dynamic sense of, you know, not only are these things charging along, but a real sense of the riders are connected to it. Do you know what I mean? You go back to the old
days. They are riding those mounts rather than sat on top of them.
Yes, there you go. Very eloquent, Dan. Thank you very much. Use your big boy words, Steve.
Use your words, Steve.
But yeah, no, and I think for me, nailed it. If I had my tiniest little feedback, would be the guns. Now, first of all, totally understand why the long rifles are not the big magazine fed ones, which I really like, that are on the flyers, because on a horse having a big banana mag is going to be tricky.
Yeah,
I'd like the little drum mags with the little blue, you know, obviously energy cells in. I think they're good. There's just a couple of models that look very, very much like Winchesters.
Yeah,
with the tube mag underneath. And there's one dude, I guess, who's the leader, sergeant, whatever,
with a revolver.
That is just
a cowboy revolver.
Cowboy revolver. So I can understand the nod to cowboys. That kind of makes sense.
You always feel like it's too anachronistic.
Yeah, I would just tweak those guns for me personally, because, you know, I just don't see Yeehaw as being the Mechanicum, really. So, but yeah, I mean, top marks for thinking about not making fantasy weapons or sci-fi weapons that look great in the hand but are completely unrealistic. You know, how do you draw them out of the holster? How do you wield them across the horse without knocking the mag out? All that stuff, brilliant, love it. Just a couple of little aesthetics I would like to tweak. But yes, and we all know where we're going to be seeing these models, don't we?
Cities of Sigmar.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the first thing that I saw when I saw the guy that's drawing them. They are very cowboy. They've got the kind of scarf, kind of bandanery things. You can see that those head that those are easily head swappable by the looks of it. So from the left to right of the guys with the double pistols, you've got a guy with double pistols, right, he's a pistolier. You've got a guy with a pistol in one hand and a clubby thing, right, well, he's a pistolier sergeant.
Yeah.
Or in fact, cancel that, put a pistol in his left hand instead of a club and he's another pistolier.
Yeah.
And then you've got the guy with the blunderbussy kind of repeater rifle, he's the sergeant. Or you use those blunderbussy type things as outriders.
Yes.
And then you, yeah, exactly. It kind of, it writes itself. And the same for, you know, going to the kind of more cowboy ones with the Scutarii heads rather than the, well, they've all got Scutarii heads, you know, the kind of hooded heads rather than the helmeted heads. My AdMech unit knowledge is poor. I can never tell the difference between Rangers and Vanguard. So, yeah, these have got the kind of old style guns. Maybe these are fine for Outriders. They are all, you know, they're all a head swap and a paint job away from being basically Age of Sigmar kind of realm, because Age of Sigmar is so bonkers these days, you can get away with it. I think you'd build them with the horsey heads rather than the flamethrower heads. But can we just say, giving your horse a flamethrower head is amazing. I mean, like, what's not to, you know, like, you know, there's that joke in like fantasy games where like the horse, the steeds always do more damage than the riders. Well, yeah, that's because you put a flamethrower on its face. It's just gonna exacerbate that problem.
I think they're stunning, and I think for me, you know, we look at what's the robot company in America, Boston
Dynamics.
Yeah, I mean, we look at their vehicles, their ponies, their troop carrier, you know, equipment.
Are they the ones with the creepy robots that can open doors?
Yeah, I mean, you look at those and you think, well, the legs are probably jointed the same, you know. So you could have easily made these look as awkward and as tentative, but no, these things just
these things like very much are horses, you know. Yeah, that's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
I like, yeah, big fan of these models. Yep. It's, to be honest, it's enough to make me want an AdMech army. You know, we talked about that flyer looking cool, maybe with a wing swap.
Yeah.
But I've got a Cities of Sigmar project, and it is very steampunky. So actually, maybe I should just use these.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay. I've been thinking about doing like Drakari Caradhron Overlords. So Caradhron Overlords are the kind of steampunk flying dwarfs. So I was thinking of using, I bought myself a Forge World Drakari, or what's it called, the big Ravager thing. Tantalus, there we go.
Yes.
I bought myself Tantalus to potentially build a Drakari army. Then I thought, oh, wait a minute, I could use this as like Drakari Don Overlords. That would be cool. And I've been like really kind of umming and ahhing, because I also want to build a Marienburg steamship thing, you know, the landship, build that into an ironclad. But then that's a very like human steampunky vibe rather than that kind of sky pirate elven vibe. So I've been like umming and ahhing. And actually, now that these are out, these are just Outriders and Pistoliers for Cities of Sigmar easily. So it pushes me towards the steampunk aesthetic. Yeah. And then one of the things that I really like Scourge models, the Drakari Scourges.
Yep.
And I was thinking, oh, I could use those as the Endrin Riggers, who are like the little floaty dwarf things with the rivet guns and the kind of bloom backpacks.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, that's nice and easy. You know, Scourges with some sort of maybe crossbows or something like that, you know, with a head swap to bring it into the fantasy realm. Let's use those as Endrin Riggers. But now there's these steampunky flying things. So if I need a City Sigmar fancy thing, then I can just use these.
Yeah.
It's kind of worked really well.
Yeah. No, I think what I really like about the Taraxi.
Yeah, Taraxi.
The flyers. The one thing I really like about these is that obviously they've using the same design aesthetic from the other flyer.
Yeah.
The Archicopter.
Archicopter.
So I think actually that's pulling it together now. I think sometimes when you get a sort of a design element that pops up fresh to an army, it kind of feels like it stands out. But I think now that we're getting this and we've got the horses, and actually maybe, you know, it's they're making their own space and they've got their own, and I feel a bit more comfortable about them.
Yeah. I still don't like the wings. I'm still not mad. I mean, look, I like the models. I'm not mad on the wings. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, the challenge always is that you kind of look at the amount of machinery involved there versus the amount of surface area. And okay, they've got big jets on the back, so they're not actually using those wings perhaps for lift, are they? They're using them for control.
Yeah.
But, you know,
we had this exact conversation, didn't we, of like, you know, if you can use jets to lift, and if you use jets for upward thrust, why don't you just use it for like lateral thrust?
Yeah.
But it's cool. We don't need to explain Warhammer 40k with real life physics. Cool models. I'm not mad on the wings. That doesn't mean I'm not going to build them or like them as, you know, as models. It just means that I personally prefer a more kind of techie aesthetic. But that's not the aesthetic that the AdMech have got, so it's cool.
Yeah. I do like the new heads, though, on these.
Yeah, very techie-looking heads, very fancy. I do like these. And even like the kind of now Taraxii and Cerberus. So there's a guy with a big flamer. Let me just have like copy that. I'm just clicking. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Right. That is. Oh, they haven't named the file. Usually they name the picture image, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
It's like Cerberus with a heavy flame pointer. And you're like, oh, that's a flame pointer. I wonder what that's going to be called. No, that's really frustrating. They haven't done it. So I don't know which one's which. However, they've got like big claws on their feet as well as flamers. So is it going to be almost like a suppressor squad? You know, they are going to be all three of them with flamers. Or is this like a special character? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Or, and then you go over to the other guys and they are more like, is that a sergeant with a pistol and a pokey stick?
Yeah.
And they've both got normal feet. And is the normal one the guy with the weapon? Or is the unit people with pokey sticks and pistols and a special weapon is the guy with the gun? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, is this a kind of line infantry jump unit with a sergeant with a combat option, or is this a combat unit? Equally, is this a unit of flamer guys, or is this a special weapon as part of a slightly different unit? Who knows? We'll have to wait until Engine War. Bum, bum, yeah. Bum. The yes, mystery continues. So there we go. That is the Warhammer 40K bits.
Yep.
We will get to some Forge World exciting stuff. In fact, let's do that now. So we've got some great news if you're a Warhammer 40K player with Forge World models in your collection. Yes, I am. Tell me about this great news, Warhammer community site. Well, since the release of Forge World indexes a couple of years ago, Warhammer 40K has changed a lot. Whilst the indexes were a great reference resource, we want to give you something even better, which is why the 40K studio embarked on a project to bring you a series of all new books with updated rules for these units and armies. Death Corps Krieg, Legion Drop Troops, Renegade Guard. Heck yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what I'm most excited about. Potentially, you know, Sisters of Silence coming to 40K with the, you know, the Witch Catcher thing and the Pistol Sisters. You know, that's exciting. Mechanicum, 30K Mechanicum models coming to 40K finally. I've been banging on about it since this podcast began. That's potentially an option if they don't just update old scrolls, they bring new ones in. But the most exciting thing for me here is armies. So you've got some really like neglected forces there. And I know they stopped doing Elysian troops, which is a shame. And they've brought in Scions, plastic Scions, and you can do the Scion drop Tempestus formation from Vigilus. That's, you know, that's all well and good. But there's a whole army there that could do with a whole update and could be a really unique. It could play in a completely different way. Same for Krieg. Like Krieg doesn't need to be an Astra Militarum army with plus one to hit on your artillery. You know, it could be a really uniquely an army with different types of rules. It's very much an Astra Militarum army, but they kind of bring the rules to add a really unique element to it.
Yeah, I think when I had an army for a while and it took forever to collect and that went through a couple of iterations of the rules, you know, when it first started, the fact that they were relentless, that, you know, they didn't matter how many losses you took, this is obviously in the old set of rules, but how many losses you took, you always had the same bravery. So the idea was, you know, perfectly reflected the idea that they grew up on Krieg, they knew they were gonna die, that was their job to die, they weren't afraid of it, they were working to that end. So the chances of them running away, and the number of times I played games with them, like one dude just held up a whole huge unit because they didn't kill him and he didn't run away because he was like, nope, I'm here doing this job all day, I'll just keep popping off with my las gun until something happens. I think that's where that character can come through. Do you really think they will give you rules for an army that you can no longer buy anymore, which is drop troops?
Yeah, maybe drop troops. That's just blind optimism. that's a good point. They don't make those models anymore, so will they do that? That's a good point. Strangely though, on this article kind of bit, that the leading image is a Leviathan Dreadnought.
Yes.
From the Death Guard Legion. Like, of all the lovely painted dreadnoughts that they've got, they've used a 30K dreadnought for a 40K article.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not reading anything into it. I'm not, you know, anything like that. It just seems strange that they haven't used like a chapter dreadnought rather than a legion dreadnought. That is a 30K dreadnought. It's not even a chaos death guard leviathan, you know, a hell forged leviathan or whatever they call it. That is just a 30K dreadnought.
Yes. So yeah.
It just seems a strange choice of image to use.
Yeah.
Talking of heresy, moving on, we've got a new White Scars character. I don't like this guy because he's stood on top of an Alpha Legion dreadnought. So dislike.
Okay. Big X on that one, then.
Yeah, big X on that one, because he's beating up the Alpha Legion. But yeah, cool White Scars model with some interesting cultural cues. I'm personally not a fan of the White Scars Legion or chapter, so it doesn't really do anything for me. Angels of Death, got a fancy trailer or some more snippets for the upcoming video film thing.
Yeah, looks nice series. Stylish.
Is it a series, is it a video? I can't remember.
Yeah, this is the proper Warhammer channel, isn't it, that they're working on. Yeah, no, I watch Warhammer telly.
Yeah, of course. Congratulations to the new Warhammer heroes as well. You've got Thomas Pape, Simon Rook, Anthony Lowne, Carl Ellis, Jason Horn, Alex Gonzalez, Brittany Heddleston, Giovanni Taranto, David Nathan Jurgs, Micah Johnsu, and John Williams. Well done, all.
Yep.
Blackstone Fortress, new expansion with a Zoat.
And just the best video.
Absolutely knocking out of the park with the silly videos.
And a massive shout out to an important friend of the show.
John Ashton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Steals it all.
Steals it all. What about Zoats?
The man Zoat himself.
Excellent. Well done, John. Zoats are back. Well, one Zoat. So yeah, that's cool. I'm a big fan of Blackstone Fortress. We play it with our little gaming group semi-regularly. So it's cool. And again, unique-ish aesthetic.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's got a sickle magazine. But, you know, that's what magazines look like. Apart from that, it's very much a kind of faithful reimagining of the old models. I remember looking at... Zoats weren't really in my time, but I bought a bunch of White Dwarfs that were older than my time in the hobby, as it were. So I remember seeing all these Zoats and, you know, the kind of old plastic Tyranids from the Space Crusade and stuff like that. So I know what Zoats are, but I never really had any.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Zoats are back as a... one assumes a baddie in Blackstone Fortress rather than a character or a kind of hero or something. Interestingly, so back in the distant past of 40k, they were a race of strange creatures who served as heralds for the Tyranid hive fleets before disappearing seemingly forever. We all assumed they'd just been eaten. So it will be interesting to see how they bring these into the lore. So are the Zoats still the heralds of the Tyranid Hive Fleets? Or are they going to say that was them enslaved and this is what they actually are now? Or, you know, or this is someone that's escaped? I can't see Zoats coming back as a faction, you know, despite probably the wishes of some grumpy old wargamers. I can't really see that happening. I think it's just cool that we've got a cool Zoat.
Yeah, lovely model. Yeah, what I'm really enjoying is this, and that actually ties in quite nicely with the Underworlds release, is that we end up with these one-offs, if you like, or these little bubbles that they make some models for that are great for pilfering, for storytelling, for narrative, for heroes that, you know, don't require GW to do a whole army's worth. So I'm very much for these sort of releases.
Yeah, definitely. And then lastly, we kind of saved it to the last because it was probably the largest other reveal that's not in the 40k universe, is pointy elves.
Yes.
Upcoming. So the Lumineth Realm Lords. So basically these are high elves in Age of Sigmar.
Yes.
They are a faithful reimagining of the high elf aesthetic. I think that's fair to say. They're very, very high elfy. It's clear what they are.
Yes. Yes, a shout out for the spearmen. So for me, elves are, you know, they've had hundreds of years to learn their craft, fighting. They are martial, they are organized, they are they fight as one. And it would be very easy to make a load of incredibly dynamic, swooshing elves with spears, but that's not how they would fight.
Not these ones, no.
So to come back to something where they have individual details, but I think once you line them up, you'll want to line them up because that's how they would fight. You know, they're not a rabble or a bubble of soldiers that go rattling into things. They, you know, they march with the same foot. You know, it's that classic Lord of the Rings kind of feel to them, I think. So yes, I think it was I like we've got these models now which don't just become incredibly complicated and dynamic because you can push two parts together and make them amazingly spinning things. So yeah, like them.
Yeah, and then the horses, the kind of silver helm thing, so what they call Venari Dawn Riders, are filled with grace and movement that make them instantly eye-catching. These are basically silver helms, but nicer.
Yeah, they look like they're clattering along at a pace, don't they?
Yeah.
You can almost hear the chinking of the armor and they're going to go smashing into somebody. Yeah,
Yeah, love, very cool. Love. I mean, if I was going to do this army, then a full cavalry army is the way to go, I reckon.
Yeah, I think that would look stunning.
The one I saw Paul Buckler post is full cavalry Ossiarch Bone Reapers army, and I thought, oh, that's cool, maybe I could do that. And then like a day later, this arrives, and I'm like, nope, I'm going to do that. I've just got to resist buying them because it's I've got so many projects on the go.
Yeah. So my I've never been one to play elves on the table, not been my kind of army. The one thing I'm holding out for that I might go for is all dragons.
Oh, like a Malarian army.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. Yeah, my friend Chris is waiting for that as well. And then the Light of Eltharion. So Eltharion was a swordmaster in the previous game. And previous edition, rather. That's a cool, very cool model. Just from a model design perspective, it's fantastic. The armor's hollow.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And I'm sure someone's going to sculpt, either place the armor on something or sculpt legs into it and turn it into a kind of, you know, Drakari or Eldari or Tark or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Or even just that helmet. Oh, it is stunning. Absolutely stunning. And then Teclis. So mixed reaction on Teclis from the internet. People are saying they don't like his face. They don't like the face of the Torlon thing.
Yeah, I. It's always going to be hard to such an important character that people have so many strong feelings about. How do you revision that without you know someone getting upset? I like it. I think it's. The Torlon Sphinxy thing, I think, is particularly kind of slightly unsettling and looks... I like it. It feels very...
It's creepy. And that's the point, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And to remain elegant and... I think it's very clever. Very clever. I think moving it about, taking it to a tournament...
Yeah, so Teclis's cloak is attached to its wing. And he's floating. Yeah, that's going to be a nightmare of transport. I can see many broken Teclises.
Unless you can, there's a way of magnetizing under the cloak to the wing.
Oh, that's just I think you just got to go all in. Yeah. And even its little tree. So I think you can see there the trees from one of the Warhammer community rumor engines. You know, even those reflect the new Sylvaneth Wildwood, the kind of style.
So
overall cool batch of releases, not only for 40k but also for other games
and some Seraphon as well.
Oh, you don't want to talk about Seraphon, do you, Steve?
Yeah, my all-time favorite.
I know, I was only joking. Who doesn't love Seraphon? Dinosaurs riding dinosaurs.
Yes. So yeah, excited for the new book. We also get a hint of how their stories have evolved, changing from the original refugees from the world that was, that became Celestial Charged Starborn, and how the Seraphon are changing into the Coalesced, whatever that means.
So I was talking about this recently with someone, as in this morning, do you think that's going to be more like a Space Marine Doctrine thing? So how Space Marines can go from Devastator to Tactical to Assault, can Seraphon go from Starborn to Coalesced? Ooh. So maybe in Starborn mode, they get access to the Slan's Constellations, plus one to cast magic, that kind of thing. And when they're Coalesced, they're more combat focused. They get plus one armor save or plus one rend.
That's really interesting.
And they can choose to do that. Or maybe they can go back with a command ability, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So depending on how, or you can even start, you know, in your hero phase, you decide whether to go Coalesced, and then you can do that in turn one, but you can't go back.
Yeah.
So if you have like a Saurus army with Carnosaurs and stuff, you're like, right, I'm going to Coalesce immediately because I want to smash face. Or you go turn one, I'm going to be Starborn, do all my casts, position myself, and then turn two, go to Coalescing.
Yeah. That's really nice. So you kind of got
maybe it's a dice roll, you know, on the first turn, you Coalesce on five up, second turn, four up. Third turn, automatically,
kind of materialize into the realm. Nice. I like your rules, Dan.
Yeah, there we go. Well, we'll see. Yeah. There's a lot of people getting really upset that we haven't got a whole suite of new models.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting, or you know, I'd hoped for new models, but you don't expect. I think when you've got important factions that have only got really, really old models like the elves, then you've got to expect them to get more attention first before you revisit the Seraphon, which you know, got a whole load of models at the end times. Now, I know that's a few years ago, but they're still, you know, the Carnosaurs and things like that are still pretty cool models.
Yeah, I've heard they're amazing, considering their age.
Yeah, and even, you know, the Flapperdactyls that you know, they're still pretty dynamic and
yeah,
they're good kits.
I love a Flapperdactyl.
Yeah. So, and then I was hoping for some endless spells. It kind of
makes
sense.
But this doesn't
sense.
Mean, like, this is what I was thinking. It, just because we've not seen the end of spells doesn't mean we're not going
to
get them.
True. But it says at the end here, it says, you won't have long to wait until this new Seraphon Battle Tome and scenery hit shelves. So keep out for more previews soon.
Yeah. I mean,
don't know.
Given the amount of endless spells in the game, do you need them?
You can't get anything more magic-y than a slan.
Yeah.
It casts so many spells.
Don't be a grumpy wargamer, Steve. Enjoy your new pyramid.
Don't get me started. I'm sorry.
You don't like it.
So I do understand that this coalesced is very much, and we've had the short story where we know that the Seraphon live within the star temple ships that fly between the realms, that there are jungles in there. So again, this piece of scenery is reminding us that yes, there is a place, there's jungles still exist, and you know, they are still bringing that heritage with them. I think for me, it just seems to be very simple, and it's just a step pyramid with some banners holding up a broken, I don't know, I whether there's a great story behind it that will make more sense, I'm not sure. It doesn't feel very inspiring. It feels a very, it feels quite backward, and I just feel like, you know, just you leave me hanging here, Dan, because I'm burying myself. I was hoping for something more inspiring, and maybe something that was more in keeping with the whole temple ships.
Yeah,
that's what I was hoping.
I know what you mean. So in the world it was, Seraphon were Aztec dinosaurs in the jungles. In the Age of Sigmar, Seraphon are celestial demons who fly around on spaceships, and the Slan imagine their lizard friends back to life.
100%.
So now this is jungle Aztec lizards again, and you feel like this isn't necessarily in line with that lore, but when we don't know the lore, we don't know how this is. Maybe this is something that the Slan build to coalesce their new Starborn. So they imagine all their stuff. They get their imaginary demon lizards to build something. What do they build? They build the thing that they remember building.
Yeah.
So it happens to be modeled on a jungle at the moment. Doesn't mean it can't exist in the desert or in the ice ravaged, you know, prairies of Gur or something. So they imagine something, they build something based on what they remember. They remember the world that was, so they build an Aztec pyramid.
Yeah.
It's got a floaty warp gate on the top. It looks cool. I hope it gets to shoot lasers.
Yeah, I think if we understand what it does, then maybe it will all make sense, and that'll be cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give me a sense of an understanding.
No, I know, but that's because we don't know what it is yet, Steve. You're at risk of being a grumpy internet wargamer, because you don't know what it is, so you don't know the context of it. You don't know whether this is part of their spaceship. You know, you yourself 3D printed a spaceship launch capsule for your Slan. So maybe this is something similar. Maybe this is like a beacon to guide those launch capsules in, that kind of thing. So we've seen a picture of a pyramid, and I get that the aesthetic is world that was style,
yeah.
But basing our thoughts on just a preview, it's important to take that into the context of what it is, and that is that we don't have all the information. So I'm excited to see what this is, and with additional context, I reckon you'll be more excited about it.
Yeah, let's get open the book.
That's my take.
Having grumbled about
the wings and stuff. I'm allowed to be annoyed about the aesthetic, but you're not. No, you know what I mean?
No, this is very different. This isn't, you know, the flyer is a flyer. Those wings are for flying.
But you know? I think the reason you don't like it is because you don't understand why it exists in the Age of Sigmar when it looks like it should exist in the world that was, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Without any context, I'm putting it somewhere, but maybe it doesn't exist. It does exist in Age of Sigmar once I understand the rules.
Exactly. Whereas right. when the new AdMech engine war book comes out and explains why these flappy birds exist, it's not going to change my view on the fact that I personally don't like the aesthetic of the wings. Whereas I think your view on the pyramid is based on the lack of information about its context.
Yes. 100%.
So there we go. There we go. So listeners, it's important to take Warhammer previews with a pinch of salt, he says very patronizingly. lest you become one of the Facebook grumbling masses. You don't want to become those people.
Don't become Steve.
Become Steve. Steve is cool. Grumpy Wargamer 793, like constantly whinging about, we haven't got this, we haven't got that. It's just enjoy what you've got.
Yeah.
Not everyone has to have the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. That is Las Vegas. End on a high note. and Warhammer Underworld's got a new warband. You could convert these into Death Guard models, maybe.
Yeah, easy peasy. Yeah, no, I think they're great. And I think, you know, they usually end up being quite good value as well, because you can buy them in a box on their own with no rules. So
Without the cards in.
Yeah.
Can you do that straight away, or is that something that comes later?
Yeah, it comes later. Usually, comes later.
Well, you just buy it and sell the cards. I'm sure it's Underworld is one of those things like X-Wing, isn't it, where you can like people want a certain card from a certain box.
Yeah. No, it's cool. So there's plenty there. There's loads there.
We're not going to have time to talk about the GC final, are we, Steve?
No, we're not.
We've done it again. Didn't we do this with the Space Marine book? We talked about previews for an hour and then did the Space Marine book. So join us in our next episode for my thoughts on the GT final.
Yes, that'd be great. Episode 43.
Episode 40-something, yeah. So there we go. Episode 42.
Oh, okay.
Unless you've got plans for 42 that I don't know about.
No secret plans here.
No secret plans. the Steve Foot spin-off of Ashes of the Imperium.
Yes.
It's just you, like, building terrain and doing narrative gaming.
Hammering and sawing.
I'd listen to that. Well, that's kind of what your Patreon is, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, patrons are going well. I'm up to 17 patrons at the moment, which is excellent. Great. And it's great fun. It's great fun to be able to share some random thoughts and ideas that wouldn't make sense on Twitter, like my desperate struggle to find 9mm rhinestones as a whole could pop up on Twitter and look a bit strange.
9mm rhinestones?
Yeah.
What, are you making a 9mm cowboy?
So, yeah, no, I want to use them as beacons.
I'm proud of that.
Take a bow. No, I'm trying to use them as lights to sit on top of sky buoys.
Buoys as in, yeah, oh, I see, that's cool.
So I've got some 5mm ones, I thought I might do it, but no, I'm going to need 9, and 10 are too wide. So, but yes, that's the sort of detail that I go to on Patreon, and I think people do find it interesting that sometimes you look at my stuff and you go, wow, what's all that about? Well, if you actually understand all the little details, they kind of have that. They're there for a reason that hopefully helps tell the story and make it clear that when you look at it, what it is. But once you delve into it and get super nerdy, then there's all sorts of stories and reasons and all that sort of stuff.
So what you're saying is, with added narrative context around a thing, people can find it more exciting.
Yes.
Much like the pyramid, Steve.
Oh, did I say that? I don't think I said that actually, did I?
So what are you working on at the moment? If someone goes to check out your Patreon, what can they expect to see?
So the current main thrust is the Bone Haulers, which is my Caradhron Overlord army, which will be coming out to play for South Coast GT, but that's being played at Narrative Games at the club. But probably most listeners would be pleased to hear that the next project that will kick off before one finishes, because there'll be certain things that take a little while to get wrapped up, will be my Talan Desert Raiders.
So that's very exciting.
Tank army. Collecting reference. I've been chatting with you about that sort of stuff. So that will be the next one. And the good thing on Patreon is that I'm using all the tags, so that if you come in and you want to just follow certain projects or certain systems, you'll be able to use the tags to get rid of all the things you're not interested in. So you just get all the detail and rubbish about the things you are interested in. So yes, hopefully that will help and be different to how Twitter works. Although I'll still be sharing some stuff on Twitter. There's you know, a big community there and lots of followers and get lots of input. So it's good.
And what is your Twitter, Steve, if people would like to look at it?
Yep, you can find me. I am at TinRacerSteve.
And if they want to find your Patreon?
Patreon.com/footworks, and that's foot with an E. So it's FWOTE Works.
And then I am at DangerMouse425, but most importantly, the podcast is at AOTI40K on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And of course, you can always send us an email, ashesoftheimperium@gmail.com, or indeed you can send us a voicemail type thing on anchor.fm/AOTI40K, and you can leave us a little voice note and you can write in to us with your voice. Writing in with your voice, that's science. So one of the things, you know, the reason why I was asking Steve about projects there was because one of the things we're going to be doing over the next year is we're going to be reflecting back on our hobby progress of our projects as the year goes on, because certainly for me it really helps having the deadline for the GT final was amazing, because it meant that I finished my Sons of Medusa. And we're going to be talking about Sons of Medusa, my plans for the Space Marines Army in a future episode, probably the next one when we talk about the GT. But one of the things that I thought would be interesting to do was, you know, I've got this idea of potentially doing a Necron army, I've got the potential doing the Tau, I bought Tantalus with no idea whether to do a Drakari army or not. So one of the things I want to do is kind of settle on an army and then almost use Ashes as my way of forcing myself to make progress on that rather than starting new projects, so that people can follow along and see how, you know, the army takes its shape. And it's not just going to be like building a 2000 point tournament army that's got three of the best things. My next project is going to be more like a hobby focused project with kind of models that I find I really like, and with some, you know, some competitive focus. So I'm not just going to be taking like the rubbish things, but where something isn't necessarily as efficient as the internet tells you it is, I'm still going to be including those, because one of my kind of takeaways from the GT was that you can take what is theoretically the best army out there, you know, a kind of top meta army. So I took Iron Hands, and I took quite a strong Iron Hands list, I thought. And I didn't do too well. I did very poorly, actually. But that's because I wasn't really playing the game. I didn't have enough experience with the army. And it made me realize that actually one of the things I love about 40K the most is the lore. And it isn't necessarily about eking out every single efficiency in a list. Like, that's like my focus on Age of Sigmar is very competitive, much like yours is very narrative, isn't it, Steve? Whereas I think my approach to 40K is more narrative, and I kind of want to bring that to life in some of my armies.
Nice. Yeah. I think that idea of having a review and having us keep sense checking what we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it is a great idea. And I think for a lot of hobbyists out there, people out there, gamers out there, just having that ability to not get yourself too bogged down in something that you think you should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a great example of that would be my Necron army. So I love wraiths. I think it's really cool, and like canoptic stuff like spiders and scarabs and wraiths, like that's my favorite thing about the Necron army. Are they the best thing in the book? No. So, and because people say, oh, they're rubbish, I've felt my Necron enthusiasm be sort of like lessened because of that.
Yeah,
because people say, and I always, like, if someone had said the same to me, I'd be like, don't listen to the internet, you know, do what you love. But because it's me, I'm like, I must listen to the internet and stop doing what I love. So I think for my 2020 40K kind of, I've been like thinking a lot about like my hobby and how I enjoy it and what I want to focus on. And for me, what I want to focus on in 2020 in 40K is building a cool hobby army to a story and a theme.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to eke out every bit of efficiency that I can.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I've tried to play, you know, efficient lists in efficient play in match play, but I spend too much time researching, painting, and adding rhinestones, and not enough practicing and understanding. Well, first of all, not understanding my own army, but obviously at competitive play, you need to understand all the other armies. And I am not in a big enough group, or I don't go to enough tournaments to understand how to, you know, if I've got to snipe this character, well, which one is it? I don't know which one does what. And so, yeah, I think just being happy in my little place.
I think that's important. And we've kind of taken quite a serious turn here, but being happy in one's hobby, it's something, you know, Max and I talked about it when Max came on and talked about how he used 40K for his recovery from alcoholism several episodes ago. But I certainly use the hobby to distract myself and kind of cheer me up, like focus on something when, you know, when you get home from work and you've had a bad day or whatever it is, hobbying for me, and the same for podcasting, like I don't mind saying I woke up this morning with a kind of like with in a bit of a like, I've got the day off work, so this is a Friday, so I've taken the day off work and I thought I'm gonna have a really productive day, but I spent the morning kind of like in a slump for some reason. Yeah. So I finally like dragged myself out of bed and I went for a run with the dog. So rather than taking the dog for a walk and kind of like sulking around the woods, I went for a run and like blasted out the cobwebs. And then I thought, right, I'm going to, rather than cancel on Steve because I'm feeling a bit grumpy, I'm going to make sure we record with Steve. And that's what the podcast and the hobby is for me. It's like a little bit of escapism, and it's a way for me to kind of find a bit of headspace, because you spend a time talking to people and you spend a time like doing something you love. And where it becomes almost like negative for you is where you look at the thing you love, which is Warhammer, and you feel less good about it because you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Because you've convinced yourself you're not doing it right. And for me, I convinced myself I wasn't 40K-ing right because I wasn't competing like at the top end.
Yeah.
And it was when I like lost, you know, 4 out of my 6 games, I was like, oh, you know, I've done really badly at this tournament. And we'll talk about the tournament as well in greater detail, but like, I've done really badly at this tournament. I've only won 2 games, and one of them was against a spare player, so it doesn't really count. So I've only won one game, and really, and I convinced myself that I'd failed at that tournament.
It's about you taking control of it and not the hobby dragging you about, which is I'm not saying your mates, I'm not saying SGW, I'm not saying, but it is literally, we have so many options with this wonderful hobby about, you know, do I dive in here, do I concentrate on this, do I go on that. Sometimes, yeah, I think it's a good idea, we'll have keep a track and keep a tally on ourselves as we go through the year, as you know, what are we doing? What's driving us? What's leading us to the next army? Why are we doing that? Just be a bit more conscious in what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we go. Ending on a slightly like different note. So that wasn't related to the Las Vegas Open. I guess that's why I kind of like went back to you on the Seraphon Pyramid thing, Steve, because I I know that you're a huge fan. Like, I'm a huge fan of Seraphon. That's why I like pretended to skip it at the end. Like, I love Seraphon, and you're right, it isn't necessarily what I expected of it, but I could see you had invested in it emotionally and it wasn't what you wanted. So it was almost like it not being what you wanted was like, you were like, oh, I'm not as excited about Seraphon. And I was like, no, we need to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%. You invest, you say, you know, I've got hundreds of models. I've spent hours and hours painting and playing with them and making up silly stories. For me, they are a big part of it. So I want the releases to allow me to take those next steps and include it and evolve it. And yeah, I, once we get the book and we get a true understanding of as any release, you know, 40K or whatever, once you get your head under the bonnet, read the background, see how that background is brought to life through the rules and special abilities and command abilities and the stratagems, then you suddenly start to say, ah, right, okay, I see how that comes together. Now, if that evolves into being a playstyle I'm not that keen on, but that's fine, because, you know, it's not just for me. The game has to evolve and change. But at the moment, yeah, I'm just kind of excited but nervous.
We shall look forward to many exciting releases on the horizon and be excited and nervous about them all.
Exactly.
Right, on that note, we'll leave it there and look forward to the next episode, where we'll be talking about more exciting Warhammer 40K things and, of course, the GT final and lots more to come. Happy hobbying all.
Cheers, guys.